Steve and Jill here.
Hi.
Welcome to the Land Academy Show, entertaining land investment talk. I'm Stephen Jack Butella.
And I'm Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny Southern California.
Today, Jill and I take a look at or talk about math on rental property versus buying and reselling land.
I would like to take a moment and explain to everyone, this is Business Week. So if it sounds a little dry, it's really some important business topics that we're covering.
I love talking about this stuff. That's the truth of it.
That's good. So it's exciting for you.
You know, the whole premise of this topic is, we get some version of this all the time. Hey, I've got a couple of $100,000. What should I do? Mm-hmm. How can I really maximize the question is, how can I maximize it for my personality type? Because we have friends who have made single family residential rental empires, not joking. Mm-hmm. And we have friends who have apartment building empires. Mm-hmm. And everybody's real happy and comfortable, and it all makes sense to them. Right. And they look at us over after a couple of drinks, and they say, "What the hell you guys mean you buy and sell land?"
Yeah.
To which I say, "What the hell you guys mean? You have like small rent. You have 22 four room apartments in Los Angeles, or four unit apartments. Mm-hmm. That's my nightmare." And their nightmare is to buy rural vacant land. So. It ends up being a pretty funny conversation almost always, but that's what this show's about.
Thank you.
Before we get into it, let's take a question posted by one of our members on the landinvestors.com online community. It's free.
Greg wrote, "I'm so sorry for not being a good rule follower without understanding the reasons behind things."
Okay, stop right there.
Uh-huh.
Greg, I love this. I love it. I love that you're not a rule follower.
Okay.
And I love that you question everything. I think that it's those elements of a personality make you massively successful at whatever you're going to try.
I don't usually get the same response out of you.
I just think you people all need to start wearing a mask.
Do you know what's funny?
What do you mean? Why do I have to wear a mask? I'm just telling you have to. That's a rule follower.
We were in Costco. I was with the kids in Costco that day, totally like this. I'm like, all right. We weren't sure if we were allowed to like walk around and eat. They had a food cart, right? And I was with, actually, it was with kid one and a friend. So I had two guys with me, and they're starving. I'm like, all right, we're going to go over to Costco to get the little food area and get some hot dogs and some drinks. We're like, but they took all the tables out, right? Because it's all indoors in this Costco, because it's in Seattle. I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm like, I'm not sure if we're allowed to walk around the store eating like this, right? I think we are. It's Costco. But anyway, I just turned to both of them real quick and I said, are we going to ask for forgiveness or permission? They said, forgiveness, in unison. I said,
done.
Nice. So let's go get you guys some food.
So you're a good mom.
I am a good mom. Thank you. It's really funny.
So can you repeat this first sentence?
Okay, so let's go back.
I just love this.
But this is how I roll anyway. I'm like, I'm not going to be here.
Me too.
I'm always ask for forgiveness before permission.
Me too.
So Greg says, I'm so sorry for not being a good rule follower without understanding the reasons behind things.
Yes.
Of course, I've heard if the owners are deceased, move on. Well, I don't think that applies, but okay. We'll keep going.
Yeah.
If doing a self-close, agree to move on. But if going through title, I would imagine the title company would take care of these sorts of issues. And if the purchase agreement was worded so that the seller would cover any fees associated with providing clear and transferable title, that would protect me from large attorney fees. I don't pay until title closes, so I'm not tying up my capital. What am I missing? Under what circumstances does this not work, and is this a bad idea?
Question
Thank
one.
Thank you oh, so sorry. Much for your experience.
It's question one, he says, what am I missing? Question two, what circumstances is this a good idea or a bad idea? So let's take a couple steps back because this is an incredibly intelligent question. And I can tell by the way how you're wording this that you're very, very new. So Jill and I together are going to dispel this hopefully efficiently. And so it's easy to understand. So when two people buy a property, this is what almost always happens. Two people buy a property, somebody dies. So, and hopefully the second person is alive and they're willing to sell the property and they're making decisions for themselves. In a lot of cases, the second person's dead too. So this becomes this mystery of who can legally convey the property so that when you get it, you're the buyer now, mm-hmm. you actually own it and everything's cool and there's not a cloud on the title. And it's very, there's a lot of variables. How it's titled is a big deal. If it's titled in joint tenants and that one person is still alive, you're all set. This is the vast majority of the time. Where you run into problems, and Joe, this is, you're an expert. You're an expert on this.
The full description is, what you're looking for is joint tenants with rights of survivorship. And that tells you exactly what it is right there. Rights of survivorship means that, and it could be four people, it could be two people, it could be eight people. It means that when whoever passes on, that is divided equally among who are left. And nothing special needs to happen there's no probate or anything like that. It's just kind of, it's automatic. Sorry.
By the way, the stuff that we're talking about here, this is not a rule following thing. This is how it is. Mm-hmm. And you don't bend the rules on this. You don't. There's no recorder or title agent that says,
if we file this paper, it's okay. No.
Yeah, there's no silver bullet.
Kind of, it is. You're doing it. You either can or you can't. Yeah.
Right. What happens often, and I think what generates most of these questions, is both people are dead, and the property is still in that person's name, or in the parent's name, let's just say, and the siblings or the person who is staring at a will that says, I got all my parents' stuff in the will, is saying, all right, I'm ready to do this deal. Let's do it. And it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not that easy.
It's the only way you can undo that is through, there's a bunch of ways. It depends on the state that it's in. We don't have... This is a whole week of shows on this stuff.
Right.
But you are right about this. A good title agent is going to tell you real quick whether or not you can do this.
Right.
And if we have any issues like this, we do one or two things. If Jill thinks there's a chance, she sends it to a title agent.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no chance, we do pass.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a database full of thousands and thousands of awesome real estate deals that we never purchased because of these issues.
So I'm going to follow up with this for you, Greg. So you're looking for joint tenants. We just covered that. You're also looking for, maybe it's in a trust. That's a whole different ballgame. If it's the Bob Smith Family Trust of 1994, and we've got the trust document showing everything, the property's in the trust now. It's not in Bob Smith's name. So this is a whole different scenario, too. We're all set there. We just need the trust showing who is... entitled, who is the who's the person supposed to sign it, basically
the executor.
The executor, that's what I'm trying to say. That is a different scenario too. So there are a couple situations. Just because somebody's dead doesn't mean move on. I guess that's my point, is dig a little bit deeper, because there are a couple caveats. And Stephen's exactly right. I've done enough that I kind of can eyeball it and know that this state's going to take a probate. Yep. I know it's going to take, now with COVID, it's going to take 6 months when it used to take 90 days. And I don't want to wait that long, kind of thing. And nowadays with COVID, I will tell the people, shucks, you know, here's what you're probably going to need to do. You know, do you have a family attorney who helped you with some other things? Call them back and get this done. And then when it's done and it's in your name, then I love to buy it from you. That kind of thing, and just kind of explain it. I don't want to take this on. I don't want to take this down. I know people, and some people do. I know a lot of members that do. They'll say, you know what? I'll help this guy because I'm buying it for $1,000 and it's worth $50. I'll help the guy. I'll find him an attorney. I'll hold the seller's hand. You know, I'll pay for it because I'm going to get the property in the end. And they want to take. They want to do those kind of deals. So that's another personal preference.
So that's great, guys. What the hell do I do? That's all complicated. I don't understand anything you just said. Here's what you do. Every single time you talk to a seller, you work this into your script. This sentence: is everybody alive and willing to sign? I'm showing on my computer screen that John and Sally Smith own this property as joint tenants of rights of survivorship. And then the seller says, if you're probably talking to the kids or one of the parents, the seller says, Sally Smith died in 1987. John Smith is totally alive. Done. Mm-hmm. Okay, we can do the deal.
Right.
So you do that, and that's the good news. If it's that's not the case, is everybody alive? The answer to the question is no. Everybody's dead, and it's both in their name. You have a choice right at that point.
Mm-hmm. If you want, I'll help everybody else out too. That's actually on my, there's like a list of 10 things that you want to ask a seller when they first call you back. And if you want a free copy, which is true, my quick little inbound seller call sheet, you can get it for free on our website. If you want to go over to landinvestors.com, it's on the, I think it's on the left-hand side. Scroll down. It says Jill's inbound seller call sheet. Not kidding.
It's the title of it is what it actually is.
It is. Go imagine print it that. Out, and you know, and you'll have all the questions right then and there, because you want to find this out. This is the kind of thing too. You want to find out right away. The minute the person's calling you, you want to find this out. You don't want to go spend an hour looking at the property, looking at the numbers, seeing what's possible, doing your due diligence, and then come to find out can't buy it anyway.
Yeah.
Like, great, I just wasted an hour.
Yep. I'm gonna smoke that out real fast.
Totally.
You can smoke all this stuff out really fast.
Yeah, you can. If you have that sheet, I'll tell you right now. And I'm going to do thing, what's today? Tuesday. Oh, wait, it's tomorrow. It is tomorrow. I am going to be live on YouTube and Facebook. I'm telling you right now. And I'm going to do a quick little due diligence 101. And I'm going to show you, I'll show you my sheet, how to have the sheet right there. And I'll show you what to use to do your due diligence, the tool that I use every day. It's NeighborScoop, and how to navigate it.
Today's topic, the math on rental property versus buying and reselling land. You are not alone. Oh, this is why you're listening.
It's just a coincidence that I thought about that. I'm like, wait a minute. Today's Tuesday.
I saw it on the calendar.
Wednesday.
I wasn't going to say anything.
How convenient is that?
I wasn't going to say anything because...
Why?
I don't know if you... I saw it on the calendar, but I don't know if you guys are... I don't know what you guys do.
Oh, okay. It's a pretend calendar. We do it just to throw you off.
I don't know. I mean, stuff changes every minute, as it should.
Okay.
You've got a few hundred thousand dollars, or you've got $5,000, or you've got zero. You know, you want to maximize your, and you know you want to be in the real estate business, and you're probably young. If you don't have any money, you're young. If you're old like me, you have a lot of money, and you don't know what to do with it, or some version of that in between.
I was going to say, You're young and stupid with no money, or you're old and stupid with a lot of money. Just joking.
And so much experience that you're angry about everything.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Okay.
The question is a twofold question. How are you going to maximize your revenue? And then the second part of that is with your personality type. I've never had success with the rental business when I'm involved with the operations. I don't have the patience for it. What happens is this. Jill and I go buy, this is a true story. True stories. And we never learn our lesson. We'll probably do it next year. We go and buy a bunch of rental property. However that is, it's either apartment buildings, houses, or in the case now here, it's gonna be mobile home parks and individual mobile homes. And so you plow a bunch of money into it. Usually it's in the form of a down payment, or you raise capital or whatever, and you get a return. And so when you buy rental property, you look at a couple of like return on investment and internal rate of return and things like that. And if you do everything right, you're going to be in the 20s. If you leverage it properly, you've got the right partners. People actually pay their rent, believe it or not. And right now, a lot of people are not paying their rent. You're going to get a 20% return. If you go buy and then you're done. Theoretically, it's passive income. It never ends up being passive income. There's always stuff to do. There's always phone calls that you get. But it's about as passive as you can get in the real estate venue, in the real estate realm. Versus, you go and buy a piece of property. Here's a real deal. Jill and I are buying two pieces of property in Central California that are close to a small town. They're each 20 acres, I think, on a state road for about $10,000 each. We'll sell those properties for $50,000 to $60,000 to $70,000 each. We don't know. Some number like that. So $20,000 in. $100,000 out, $150,000 out, whatever the numbers are. Is this a typical deal for us? Yeah. Was it a typical deal for us 3 years ago? No. A typical deal for us 3 years ago was buy for 20 and sell for 40, 60, 70. I guess that's pretty close.
Yeah.
So, and if you know, Jill and I love acquisitions. We are acquisition people. I've been in some form of acquisitions since I was a young professional adult. And that will always remain. I think that the allure, you know, what's the real math on that? So let's just answer the topic. So now if we do two or three deals like that, we've made $300,000 or $400,000. Let's say we do a deal a quarter. which I think an infant can do. We've made $400,000 or $500,000 this year. A better way to say it is, if you're doing all this stuff right, you make $100,000 a month, you make $1 million a year buying and selling land. Mm-hmm. And what, you know,
those are good numbers.
That's very realistic. It's not, you're not going to do that your first year in business, maybe not even your second year, but if you stick with it, and we have hundreds and hundreds of people in our group that are sending us thank you notes saying, yeah, you guys are right. So it's not just, this isn't some fluff. You got to work at it though. You own a company. You work 8 hours a day, at least. In the beginning, it's a lot more than that. So that's the real math. The real math on a rental houses are, if you are lucky enough to have a source of capital that you don't care about, I'll give you the business model of a great friend of ours. This guy is a very experienced rental house manager. His wife has a brother, his brother-in-law, who sold his medical company and nets out $50 million, doesn't know what to do because he's a medical guy. He's not a money person. Our friend goes to the brother-in-law and says, hey, why don't you set up a line of credit? I'll go buy a bunch of houses for cash. Takes the leverage out of it entirely. There's big debates about leveraging or not leveraging. Let's just make it simple. And he starts buying houses for $100,000 and renting them out for $1,000. And he gets the portfolio up to 100 houses. So now he's making $100,000 a month. And he's just managing the houses. And when people move out, he rents them out. And he drives his little old 4Runner around like an old man. And pays his taxes on it. And he's just the happiest guy ever. Mm-hmm. And he makes about $1 million a year. He and his partner. Mm-hmm. So which one would you rather do? And that took him 3 years to build that up and you got to clean the houses out. I'm oversimplifying. You know, the houses that he's buying are a mess. They're old from the 50s in Central Phoenix.
Right.
The type of tenant, you know, you got to get two or three or four tenants in there before you get the one that stays.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff involved.
I'm laughing. I'm thinking about his horror stories. Like, he can tell right away when people roll up based on how their car looks and the trash in their car.
Looks in their back seat.
Right? He does this. He's learned to check that to see what kind of tenant they're going to be.
Yeah.
Because if their car's a disaster, we got a really good idea what's going to happen in the house.
So we both make the same amount of money. And Jill and I live at the beach with a cocktail in our hand just about every single afternoon, because all we're supposed to do is make $100,000 a month buying and selling land.
Yeah.
She doesn't even need me for that. So that's the math. The math is about the same on all these real estate investments. It's just truly who you are.
Right. That's good. That's a great way to say it. You summed it up perfectly.
Yeah.
Happy you could join us today. 5 days a week, you can find us here on the Land Academy Show.
Tomorrow, the episode on the Land Academy Show is how to structure your land business. You are not alone in your real estate ambition. I forgot to mention, there's two components to these real estate businesses, and here's where he might win and we might not. There's the income statement and the balance sheet. We covered the income statement. We both make the same amount of money, great. Mm-hmm. He's collecting appreciation on these assets year over year. So his assets, on a national average, houses go up 4% a year nationally. Of course, we don't care about national statistics because in California, they go up like 11%, and in Detroit, they go down a negative 11%. So the average is 4. So he's collecting some pretty massive appreciation on 100 houses as he goes. And he's got something to sell at the end. There's a pretty serious exit strategy. Sure. To which I say, and my hat's off to him, and he's right. He's right, and I'm wrong. This is not our only business.
Right.
We don't just buy and sell. We have so much more free time. We have other companies. We have companies like NeighborScoop. Or offers to owners. Both companies depends on which month you look at them, can be profitable and sellable. So we've chosen, because we have some tech talent, or tech patience, I should say, to build our balance sheet through other stuff and diversify.
It's true. Awesome. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you find our content valuable, and we appreciate your support. If you haven't already, please zip on over to our YouTube channel and hit the subscribe button.
And your comments and suggestions help us to create the type of content you're here for. Hitting the like button helps to support our channel's algorithm, engage your interest in future shows. We are Steve and Jill. Information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property.